I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on the Wire. Today, my guest is Reina Grande. She is the best-selling author of The Distance Between Us, which came out in 2012, and then her newest book, which we're going to talk about today, A Dream Called Home. She also has a novel called Across 100 Mountains and another book called Dancing with Butterflies. She has received the American Book Award, El Premio Aztlán Literary Award, the International Latino Book Award. She was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Awards. She's, in other words, huge. So let's talk to her. Reina Grande, welcome again to Words on a Wire.
Thank you so much.
It's been a few years since you've been here, but I want to even go back further than that and start off with talking about your very first novel, Across 100 Mountains, which, by the way, I'm going to confess right now, is one of my favorite titles. I love it. I think it's such a beautiful title, and it grabbed my attention immediately. But that was a very successful novel. You started with that, and now you're here on, what, your 10th book, your 11th book?
No, I wish. It's I call it 4.5.
Oh, okay.
I have 4.5 books because my third book was published twice as a young reader's version. So I don't call it a whole book. I call it a half book.
Oh, The Distance Between Us, you mean? Or Dancing with the Butterflies?
Yes, Yeah, The Distance Between Us was published twice.
Wow. And did you have to re-edit it for a different kind of reader?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because it was a young reader's adaptation. So then I had to adapt the book for that audience. And it went through some changes. But it's mostly the same book, but without some inappropriate content for young readers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And by inappropriate content, I assume you mean the honesty within which you write about your characters in your life. You don't hold anything back.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, when I write, I really want to be honest mm-hmm. with the writing and honest with myself and who I am and the experiences I've had. So that's kind of what guides me when I set out to write. I want to be very honest, but sometimes I feel that I overdo it, to be honest.
Well,
I'm a little too honest at times.
I don't think your readership feels that way.
Yeah, but the Across 100 Mountains was published over 12 years ago, and like 12 and a half years ago now.
Wow.
And it feels like such a long time ago, but it's still, I have such a soft spot for it because it was my first book, and it taught me that I could finish a book, which was a lesson I needed to learn.
Right. And it was successful, and your follow-up books have obviously been successful. And one of the things I love about your writing, though, is how you reinforce our cultural value and our significance culturally, but you don't romanticize our culture. And I'm wondering if that's a fine line for you to write about and assert even a cultural perspective without romanticizing it.
Mm-hmm. I don't really think about it. I think it goes back to your comment about honesty, because when I set out to write, I just want to be honest with the experience. And my experience with my culture is not romantic.
Right.
You know, I love my culture, and because I love it, I can see the flaws.
Right.
And so in my writing, that comes out. I write about the beautiful things about my culture, but I also write about the flaws and our shortcomings.
Right.
And I do that with my culture. I do that with my family. I do that with myself, where I write the good, the bad, and the ugly, and especially the ugly.
Right. Because if you tried to write about, just one kind of way to read it, like everything's good, everything's bad, it would certainly not be as, it wouldn't have the depth that your stories have now.
Mm-hmm.
I know that your novel and maybe your two, I think your last two books were translated into Spanish, not only in Spanish, but they were translated and available in Mexico, and you were able to go back to Mexico, where you were born, as a California Mexican writing in English, but to present a translated book. And I'm wondering how that felt for you, going to Mexico for the first time as a writer from California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a beautiful experience because when I have gone to Mexico, I only go to visit my family. So I go as Reina the niece, Reina the cousin. And that's right. The only version of myself that I can be there in Mexico with my family. I don't come as Reina the writer. They really don't know me as the writer. So I always felt that there's a part of myself that they don't know. You know, part of myself, my family will never know because I can't share that with them. But once my work was published in Mexico and I've been invited to come and do presentations there, now I can finally come as Reina the writer, and I can bring that part of myself that is so important to who I am. And now, you know, I've had some of my cousins come and attend my events, and they see me now as Reina the writer, and they've read my work. So to me, it was really special to be able to share it with my family, but also it's been really wonderful to be able to come to Mexico, to come to my native country, and be able to share my work with them, because I have been a writer here, you know, professional writer for over 12 and a half years, and I've had a lot of success here in the U.S., and it always made me sad that I couldn't share that or have that experience in my own native country, but now I have, and I have had the opportunity to go into high schools and universities and meet the students there. And it's an interesting experience because I'm so used to speaking to students here, you know, immigrant students, children of immigrants, or white students. Like, it's very different kind of experiences that they're dealing with. And when I went to Mexico to talk to those students, it was different to see what their experiences are like. And I had this really powerful moment at one of my readings at a high school where this young girl, during the Q&A, she raised her hand and she asked me a question and she couldn't stop crying. She couldn't get the question out because she was crying. And I felt so bad for her. And I said, "Do you want to ask me the question after?" Because she just couldn't get the words out, you know, because of her tears. And then she said, no, I want to ask you the question. And her question was that she said her father has been in the U.S. for many years and she hasn't seen him. And she said, "Is it worth it?"
Wow. And what did you answer?
You know, and I'm in Mexico, like, talking to these kids. And when she said that, "Is it worth it?" It reminded me of when I was in Mexico waiting for my father to return. And it was a question that I would ask myself, too. You know, is it worth it? And my response was, "You have to make it worth it."
That's a brilliant answer. Yeah. In A Dream Called Home, your latest book, which just recently came out, it's a memoir that begins with leaving Los Angeles to go to UC Santa Cruz in Northern California to study your bachelor's degree, I believe. And then it goes after you graduate and when your book comes out. And there's this beautiful scene, really gut-wrenching scene for me, when you do your reading. It was part of your book tour, but you did a reading at UC Santa Cruz and your family was there seeing you that way for a first time. And now I think about what you're talking about in Mexico, the first time your family sees you in Mexico. And so really it just kind of tells me that writing and family are intimately linked for you.
Yes, definitely are, because I believe that my writing comes from my experiences with my family, the good and the bad experiences. It all comes from there, from my desire to explore my relationships with my family, to understand the things that my parents, you know, things that they did, choices they made. I don't think I could write outside of my family.
Wow. And I'm wondering, like, when you wrote that scene that I was referring to in A Dream Called Home, where you do your first reading at UC Santa Cruz, and there's hundreds of students there because they're actually using your book in that college, that particular college at the UC campus. And then I'm thinking now about reading in Mexico, going back to Mexico, it's not only seeing your family, but seeing, you know, yourself and where you came from. And it makes me wonder if the first time that you were there, or many times that you were there, as you're taking the stage and as you're about to read or about to talk, do you think, how am I going to write about this?
No, I don't. I don't think about, as I'm living my life, I'm not thinking about how I'm going to write about it later.
Is that hard not to do?
No, I just don't ever think about it, which I kind of regret sometimes. You know, when I look back on moments, I feel like, man, I wish I had been writing about that as I was going through it.
Right.
And one example is my father's death. You know, he when he was diagnosed with liver cancer, he died a year later. And I didn't really write anything during that year mm-hmm. as he was dying. And now, as I'm looking back on that time, I've been wanting to write about it. I wanted to write poems, but I really suck as a poet, so I'm giving that up. And I think I'm just going to write, like, short pieces.
Right.
And just, I wish so much that if I had the foresight to write things down wow. as things were happening.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I just don't think that way. I just enjoy my life. I right. enjoy the experience. I'm there. I'm present in the experience. So I don't think about writing at that moment.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, there's a question, you know, like, as you experience it, are you writing it? But I think what I'm more referring to is that now that you've written two memoirs, and I imagine you're so good at it. These are like self-portraits. You are like the Frida Kahlo of Latinx literature. You know, these are self-portraits. Oh. And I imagine they're not done, that they're going to continue to contribute to our literary heritage. But as you do it, I'm wondering if there are times when not necessarily you write about it immediately, but you think of language, you hear a voice that's telling about it, like maybe you're entering into a room and a voice mm-hmm. might come to you. She entered into a room. Language is different for you. Language is something that you use to tell your story and present as, this is me, this is Reina Grande. And and so I imagine that language is playing with you all the time.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm sorry to
disappoint
you.
No, that's okay. That's not a disappointment.
I don't think I have a narrator in my head, like in Jane the Virgin.
Uh-huh.
With the narrator.
Right, no. Right. Okay, well, that's good. That's good. Because I suppose that, you know, that could drive a person crazy.
Yeah, no, yeah. If you kept hearing those voices in your head all the time, yeah, no, it would drive me crazy.
I'm talking to Reina Grande. Her new book is called A Dream Called Home. And you write about getting your education, getting your bachelor's degree and your MFA, and then you go back to Los Angeles, where you were raised, and you get a teaching job. And it's the very first professional job you have as an educated woman. And it was in South Central Los Angeles teaching middle school, which, you know, is not an easy job for somebody who's never taught to
right.
do before. And you write about coming into the classroom and feeling immediately like you were losing control of the students. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and how it might have affected you as a writer?
Yeah, well, I managed to turn a negative experience into a positive because, yeah, teaching middle school was not for me. And I was desperate for a job because creative writing does not prepare you for a real job.
Right, right.
So I needed to find a way to pay my bills, and LAUSD had a teacher shortage, and they gave out emergency credentials to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a one-week training before I was thrown into a classroom,
wow.
and it was terrible. I just didn't know how to be a teacher. I didn't know anything about doing lesson plans or classroom management, nothing. I just got thrown in there, and I had to figure things out, and it was challenging because it was halfway through the year, and it was in a challenging area too, you know, and I felt I did not have the training for it. So I was very miserable during the whole time, and I did make some meaningful connections with some students that to this day, like, they're all my Facebook friends.
That's great.
And these were all my little sixth graders that I adored.
Mm-hmm.
But the seventh and eighth graders were just, you know, they just terrorized me. And they could tell that I was scared. And they took advantage of that.
That very first image you write of being in the classroom, waiting for them to come in. And then they come in and they're taller than you. And
yeah.
Immediately they call you Miss Chiquita.
Mm-hmm. Miss Chiquita. And then they're like, do you have a boyfriend? It was really hard, and I was having such a hard time, but because of that experience, it made me work harder to get back to my writing and to try as hard as I could to make a career as a writer,
mm-hmm.
because I never wanted to go back to that situation again, where I have to have a job just to live, but my soul was dying, being in a job that I did not love, that I did not enjoy, that every single morning when I woke up, I dreaded waking up and having to show up to this job. And that experience taught me that I needed to do whatever it took for me to be a professional writer and to have a career that I love and that feeds my soul and my spirit.
Wow. And you are one of the few writers who actually does make a living off of their writing, aren't you? How you do well as a writer. You don't need to teach anymore.
I have been very lucky that I'm going to say in the last 5 years, I've lived entirely off my writing. Mm-hmm. I have not had to have any jobs outside of my writing. It's just all my writing. And by writing, I mean not just my books, but, you know, I get paid to do presentations. Right. Like I do a lot of speaking in schools and I get paid for that. I get paid to do keynotes at conferences. So I'm making a living through my book sales, my speaking. And then once in a while, I get invited to teach workshops. Like this summer, I'm teaching at the Brett Loaves Writers Conference.
That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how I make a living, doing many different things, but they're all related to my writing, which is what I'm really thankful for.
Right, right. And because of that, of course, you travel a lot, more than most people. And I'm thinking of this image in A Dream Called Home that really struck me. One of your babies, I forget if it was the first or the second, was 3 months old, and already you're taking the baby on the road with you. And
oh, yeah.
How was that experience? Like, God, it must be great for the baby's development.
My daughter was 3 weeks old.
3 weeks?
I took
her
on my first trip.
Wow. And how did that work out?
It was hard because I went by myself with my daughter, and I ended up having to do part of my presentation with her in my arms.
Wow, how beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it was scary. I couldn't focus because I kept thinking, like in my mind, I just kept saying, please don't wake up. Please don't wake up. Please don't wake up.
Right.
Because I just kept imagining her waking up and screaming, you know, and I was doing my presentation with her in my arms.
Wow.
I wish I had a picture of that. I wish someone had taken a picture of me doing that.
Oh, that would be a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how old is your daughter now?
She's 11.
She's 11. And so I imagine your daughter grew up just experiencing so much intellectually and culturally, and that she's, you know, it's all very, very good for her.
My kids, because of my travels, you know, they have seen a lot of the world. You know, last summer I was invited to do a presentation in Germany, and they came with me. And I was just thinking, you know, their childhoods are so different from mine. But I hope that they appreciate all of these experiences.
Oh, yeah. You know, even if they don't consciously appreciate it or express appreciation, it's going to show in how they develop intellectually and spiritually. I mean, it's a very powerful thing for them to experience, you know, their mother doing the wonderful things that you're doing. You know, and I think about that first image of walking into the class and how intimidated you were and how they started calling you Chiquita. And then I think about how intimidated I was the first time I met you. I think it was in Los Angeles. You were organizing a panel at the Latino Book Fair that I was involved in. It was the first time I'd ever met you. Of course, I had heard about you, but I felt very, very
intimidated.
Wait, you were intimidated? Oh, my God, are you kidding? I didn't know what to say to you. I was like, you were not Miss Chiquita to me. You were Miss Grande, literally and figuratively. And I'm imagining that when you walk into a room, you are walking into a room making presentations, especially not, you know, for young people or anybody, that people who have read your book and people who admire you. And I'm wondering if that reinforces your clearly deep commitment to spreading education and encouraging young Latinos and Latinas to achieve their dreams.
Yeah, well, because I feel that whenever I walk into a room full of young people, I always remember that I was them at one point in my life. And I remember how meaningful it was whenever I met someone I admired. And so when I walk into a room, I think about that. You know, I think about what kind of impact can I make on these young people today that I'm here with them? What are they going to remember about me many years from now? and what can I leave them with? So that's kind of what goes through my mind whenever I do events.
Right. Yeah, and I imagine that for many of those students, and for anybody who goes to a reading, what they remember most may not be necessarily the details of what is being read or what is being said, but the feeling that they got, the energy that they got. And I imagine you put a lot of energy into your presentations.
I do, which is really strange because, you know, I'm usually, I'm an introvert, and I'm usually quiet and observant. You know, I'm the kind that goes into a room and just observes and listens. And now that I've been thrown into like stages and, and have to talk to people, I've had to develop this different persona. You know, I have to develop someone so different from how I am.
You mean there's like Reina the writer and Reina the Reina?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And do you sometimes have to have Reina the Reina talk to Reina the writer and say, hey, slow down or something?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I have conversations with these different Reinas.
It reminds me of a story by Borges called Borges and I. And he's basically talking about the two different Borgeses, the one that he lives with, and he has to make sure he eats and make sure he, you know, does all his toiletries, and then the other Borges, the one that he reads about and whose books he sees on the shelves.
That's interesting. I should write an essay like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Reina and I, and I'll talk about all the different Reinas.
Yeah, yeah, because your life is both public and public. I mean, it's a very public life. But yet they're private moments. And I'm wondering about those private moments, how you in your incredibly busy schedule, because I mean, I follow you on social media and I know that you travel all over the world and you're always doing presentations and workshops. And I'm wondering, how do you find time to write?
Well, that's what I'm wondering too. because there are times when I'm really bad at saying no. That's my problem. Like, people email me and they invite me to their events, and I'm so bad at saying no. And then I get myself into situations where I say yes to almost everything. And then I look at my calendar later on and I say, what the heck did I do to myself? You know, how am I going to get through this? And so it's tough because I do have to slow down and I have to remind myself that as much as I want to do a difference by being out there and speaking and meeting people, I have to remind myself that I could do a difference by staying home and writing.
Right.
And I need to find a balance between those two things. One trick I'm starting to do now is to have my speeches do double duty, where I'm not just writing a speech to deliver it at the event, but turn it into an essay.
That makes sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I just tried that. Last month I gave a speech, a 45-minute speech, and I got two essays out of that.
Nice.
Like two short essays out of it.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that more. So that I don't feel so bad about giving speeches all the time and not writing, because then I'll tell myself where I am writing, because the speech is going to turn into an essay.
Yeah, I think one of the pitfalls for busy people is that they begin to fragment their lives and think, well, this is even part of the language, I wear many different hats. But I think also there's the ability that we have to wear one hat and just manifest it in different ways that are going to contribute to the other hats.
Right.
So, you know, being a writer and being a reader and being a teacher and all these things can ultimately contribute to, you know, what your goals are.
Right. And the thing is, you know, that it's really important to do these things. And that's probably one reason why I do it, because I don't believe that as writers, our only job should be to just be writing all the time.
Right.
Because writing, you know, once we publish books, those books are products and we have to learn how to sell those things. You know, we have to learn how to think like a salesperson,
right,
and
absolutely.
Go out there and push those sales. And that's why I think that my writing is doing so well, because I'm not just sitting home writing. I'm
right.
out there selling books. Sometimes I've sold books out of the trunk of my car, like tamales,
that.
You know?
Right. Oh, that's great, like tamales.
Yeah, No, I felt like a tabalera one time because I had, you know, my books in the trunk of my car. And then I would ask people, oh, which one did you want? A Cross on Her Mountains or this one or that one? And it's kind of like when you sell tamales. Yeah. You're like, you know, which kind you want? The red ones, the green ones, the pork or the chicken. And yeah.
Oh, my God. I love that. That's a beautiful image. And I could definitely would love to read an essay on that experience. You know, that comparison, it's brilliant. Absolutely.
That should be my next essay, selling books out of the trunk of my car.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And so, yeah, you're right. And there's this quote in your latest book, A Dream Called Home. It's just been released. It's a beautiful book. You write, my biggest virtue and my biggest flaw was the tenacity with which I clung to my dreams. Can you unpack that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel that it's a virtue and a flaw because there are unrealistic dreams to other people, you know, might seem unrealistic and maybe they are, but I still want to pursue them. I still cling to them.
Right.
And that might be a flaw because then you set up yourself for failure when you're pursuing unrealistic goals.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, who's to say a dream is unrealistic?
Right.
You know, I mean, somebody could have told me that being a professional writer for a former undocumented immigrant was unrealistic, and yet I still clung to it. And look, I made it happen. So that's what I meant by that, where, you know, we set goals for ourselves, dreams for ourselves, and yeah, sometimes they might be unrealistic, and yet we still continue to pursue them. But we do also have to be careful that those dreams don't hurt us,
right,
you know, because we might become bitter and disappointment and angry at the world because our dreams did not become a reality. And sometimes if you take a step back and look at them, and then you realize that maybe they were just not the right dreams.
Right. And do you set up dreams that you think are impossible? Because, I mean, it seems like the dreams you set up, you are making them happen.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say that I had a dream of having a really good relationship with my father.
And
that never really happened because it was out of my control. You know, I could only do as much as I could. But my father had his own issues and dealing with his own things. And I could not make my father change. I could not make him want that same dream.
Right.
So, yeah. So that was one dream where I felt that I was very stubborn about it, and then I realized that, you know what, I have to let it go because there's nothing I can do. I cannot change my father. And funny enough, that once I let go of that dream, when he was diagnosed with liver cancer, then he was the one dreaming it. He was the one that they wanted to have a good relationship.
Right, right. And there seems to be a difference, though, also in, you know, dreaming about how we can change other people and dreaming about, you know, what we can do in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe part of our ability to enjoy success is knowing that we can't really change other people, that the change that we want,
right,
you know, to use the cliche, but a very true cliche, we have to find within ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's important to be able to dream things that we know we have, that it's in our power to make them happen to a certain extent, you know.
Right.
And then there are other dreams that, like, for example, you know, I have a dream of getting the MacArthur Genius Grant one day. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
It's out of my control whether if I ever get one or not, right?
Right.
So it's like, you know what, I'm just going to stop dreaming about it because there's nothing I can do.
Right, right, right.
Nothing. I could just continue to do my work as best as I can, but it's out of my control.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like, you know, you set dreams that you know that there is something you can do to an extent to make them happen.
Right, right. Well, I imagine that you're going to continue providing us with books and with stories and with what is going to be next for you. And I hope, you know, I hate to ask you now because this one's just out and, you know, I don't want to put pressure on you, but but what are you working on now?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a novel.
I'm
going back to the novel. I haven't written a novel in 10 years, and I'm going back to it. I'm writing a historical fiction, which is my first time dealing with this genre. So I'm writing a story that's set during the Mexican-American War.
Oh, wow.
And it's a multiple point of view. I have an Irish soldier in the U.S. Army who deserts and joins the Mexican Army.
Oh, nice.
And then I have a Mexican young woman who joins the Mexican Army as a nurse, and she meets this Irish soldier, and there's a love story there.
Oh, great. And, do you geek out on the research?
Yeah, well, the research, that's the part that's killing me because I'm really not that good at research. And I'm an impatient writer, so I just want to throw myself into the story and write. But because I'm writing outside of my experience and outside of my time period, too, that I lived in, you know, I have to do research so that I can see and know the world that my characters are living in.
Wow.
So that has been challenging, but I'm making progress little by little.
You know, if they don't make a movie out of one of the books you've already written, and I suspect it will eventually happen, that sounds like it would make a good movie.
Well, we'll see. One day. You know, that's another one of those dreams that we were talking about. I can dream about a movie, but there's not a whole lot I can do. So.
Well, there's a lot you can do and that you are doing. You're writing fantastic books and sharing them with the community. And thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire. And now that I know how you do not like to say no, I'm going to see if we can invite you over here to El Paso, Texas to read.
Oh, well, you know what? I would say yes to that.
Well, I hope so, because you would be great here. We'll talk about it off the air. But thank you so much, Reina Grande, for having this conversation. The book is called A Dream Called Home, and it's available now. Thank you, Reina.
Oh, thank you.
I'd like to thank my guest, Reina Grande. The book is called A Dream Called Home. I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining us, Words on a Wire. And thank you to Stefania Castro, our producer, and read a book.